Okay.
Good evening.
I'm happy tonight to be able to share with you some thoughts about after the mikvah. A lot of people have heard about before the mikvah, but few speakers are willing to talk out loud about after the mikvah. I happen to be one of them. I don't know, maybe I'm the only one that will speak to a mixed group and discuss these ideas, but I feel like it's very important for them to be discussed, for them to be shared at this time in history, and it's an idea that we don't know much about. So let's start. A lot of people don't talk about it, and the way that I see it is it's sort of like talking about Sfira to Omer, but not talking about Shavuot. The whole point is the holiday of Shavuot. So what we want to talk about is what's the whole purpose of keeping the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, keeping the laws of, I don't know, how do you say Taharat HaMishpacha in Spanish? Does everybody know what that is? Yeah? Okay. So I think it's interesting. Just think for a minute. Right? Just think for a minute. We're not really talking about those laws, but I just want you to hear the word, the name of those laws for a minute. They're called Taharat HaMishpacha. They're not called Taharat HaIsha. It doesn't have to do with the woman. And they're not called Taharat HaZug either, because it doesn't have to do with the couple. It has to do with the whole family. The Tahara, the love, the connection, the physical relationship of the married couple is the space in which the entire family lives. So it's Taharat HaMishpacha. The whole thing is about the Mishpacha. The whole family lives inside what you're creating with your spouse. So that's why I want to talk about it tonight. So let's start with talking about Brit Milah. We might get a little uncomfortable. If anybody wants to blush, they're permitted. But I'm going to say what I have to say anyway. So let's talk about Brit Milah. So our Brit Milah has three steps. The Muslims actually only have two steps of Brit Milah. We have three, but the Muslims also circumcise as B'nai Brit. They're B'nai Avraham. They were commanded to circumcise. The circumcision actually has to do with the inheritance of the land of Israel, which is why the Muslims are still there. They have some spiritual claim to the land because of the fact that they circumcised L'shem Brit. That's not what I'm here to talk about. That's just a little piece of trivia. So let's talk about our Brit Milah. It's interesting to think about what do we do. We're only going to talk about the first two steps. The first two steps are Mila and Priya. The first one, cutting away the tip, cutting that extra skin off, is really saying, and we did that before we even went into Egypt, that was the Brit Milah that had to be done, was just that step, cutting away something. So that's really to teach us that that thing that is the transferring agent of the generations, that which connects the couple, and that through which one generation passes to another, that has to be cut and separated from the rest of humanity to say, this is who we are not. Right? So we cut away part to separate ourselves from the rest of humanity and say, this is not us. We're not like them. So it's important to know who we're not, but it's not enough. We have to know who we are. We have to know what we're here for, which is what the second step of Brit Milah is. It's Priya. It's actually exposing. So first there's a cutting, and then there's a pulling back of the rest of the skin to expose what's there. So that's what we want to do tonight, is expose what we're really after, what we're really trying to accomplish. That second step of Brit Milah actually happened before we went into the land of Israel. Now we combine it all together in one ceremony. But those Jews who had the first step before had the second step before entering the land, because they had to know what they were going towards, not just what they were leaving behind. So we have to know both. We're not like everybody else, but what are we like? Okay, so in order to understand what we are like, what's the whole purpose of this, we have to understand the purpose of creation. So who knows? Why are you here? What's the purpose of all creation? I heard the word. Who said it? Pleasure. Excellent. Excellent. Thank you very much. That's it. That's what our sages say. The whole world is here for pleasure. That's the whole purpose of all creation. Okay, so now raise your hand if you are living a life of total pleasure. No one? No one? So the question is, did God make a mistake? Did our sages make a mistake? Either maybe we're not actually created for pleasure, or maybe God wasn't able to create a world that's for pleasure. Like, where's the mistake here? Right? So clearly, we know that God doesn't make mistakes. And in this case, our sages are absolutely on the money. We are created for pleasure. So what's the story? Why aren't we living lives of pleasure? So it turns out this is only part of our life. Where we are right now is only the beginning. Really, we have a very long existence. And this is we're sort of like gestating ourselves for the next level. The next level is Olam Haba. How do you say Olam Haba? Right? Everybody knows what that is? Olam Haba. Okay? So, Olam Haba, what is that? I don't know about in Mexico. I do know that in America, a lot of Jews are confused between heaven and hell. Olam Haba, Gehenim. What are these things? And what do we believe? So, we talk about heaven, and we talk about hell sometimes, but we don't actually have concepts exactly of heaven and hell. So, Olam Haba is different. It could feel like heaven. It could feel like hell. We don't have a physical destination, though, because it's our soul that lives in Olam Haba. So, it can't be a physical place. Unlike what some people believe, I'll just say, the Muslims, for instance, we don't have rolling grassy hills with streams of wine or streams of honey. There's no 70 virgins, right? We don't have any concept like that at all. But we do tell jokes about that kind of thing. Do you know the story about, I don't know if this works in Mexico, but about Max and Sadie? I have to think of two old Jewish names. What are two old Mexican names? I don't know. Anyway, Max and Sadie, two old Jews, right? They die, they go to heaven, and they see it's so beautiful, rolling hills and sumptuous food and a beautiful house, and everything that they're shown, Max gets more angry and more angry and more angry. And the more beautiful it is, the angrier Max gets. And finally, Sadie says, Max, what's the matter? Why are you so angry? And he says, Sadie, you and your health food. If it wasn't for your health food, we could have been here decades ago. Right, so we don't believe in a physical place where we're going. What do we believe? All right, it's sort of like, have you ever been on a cruise? Yeah? Or Club Med, something like that, a vacation where you're cut off from the rest, right? A real vacation where you're just away from everything, okay? So imagine a cruise. You get on the boat, and there's staff to take care of your every need, right? If you have kids at home, everything's taken care of. If you have a business, it's in capable hands. There's nothing you have to think about. But on this cruise, it's just you and your spouse. If you're not married yet, think about your parents. Whether your parents are married or not, think about your parents, or you, whether you're married or not, even if you're divorced, or if you are married, think about your spouse, okay? You're on the boat. There's no other passengers, just staff and you. The whole boat is there just for you. You're away for 3 weeks on this cruise, okay? There's nothing you have to do except for hang out with your spouse. Right? There's no carpool, there's no cooking anyway here, right? Or there's no shopping, whatever. There's no things you have to do, okay? You're on the boat, right? Now, if you have a good marriage, you're in heaven. How fabulous is it? 3 weeks alone, not having to do anything else with everything taken care of for you? It's great. It's terrific. There's no distractions, nothing you have to do. But if you have a bad marriage, you're in hell because it's just the two of you for 3 weeks alone with nothing else to do, right? So the quality of the experience is directly related to the quality of the relationship, right? The quality of the experience is directly related to the quality of the relationship. That's Olam Haba. Here is where we create the relationship with Hashem. There is where we live in the relationship with Hashem. It's a cruise forever. Just you and Hashem, forever. If you have a great relationship, you're in heaven. If you have a medium relationship, you're in medium. If you have a bad relationship, you're in hell. Okay, that's a little simplified. The truth is it's more complicated than that. We don't have an idea of forever hell. That's not us. Although we do have ideas of forever heaven. But it does depend on the relationship that you create. Okay, so if that's the case then, there must be practice for that. right? I mean, here we are living, and if when we die, that's it. We're here to create, and we're there to live in the relationship. What do we do on this planet to practice for that or prepare for that? Get ready, and then you're set. What do we do on a regular basis that would help us prepare for this concept of living in the relationship without being able to do anything? Shabbat, right? We spend 6 days preparing and 1 day of living in. That's what Shabbat's about. That's why we say Shabbat is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbat is a taste of the world to come. Because on Shabbat, you can't do anything. There's no place to go, and there's nothing to accomplish, but just to live in what you have already accomplished. Okay, so you'll see how this all ties in. But that's what we're about. Shabbat is where we work on living in the relationship, nothing else that we can accomplish. Okay, so let's now talk for a minute about man and woman and how they are created. So if the world is created for pleasure, God said, I want to be able to give as much pleasure as possible to a creature. And so he created a creature that could receive all that pleasure. Well, what is the most pleasure? Who could tell me what's the most pleasurable thing that there is?
Tranquility.
Tranquility. What else? What gives you pleasure? Okay, it doesn't even have to be the most. What are pleasurable things? Ice cream. Yummy food. So let's just make a category of yummy food, okay? Pardon?
Happiness.
So with happiness and tranquility, we could make a category of good feelings, right? What else?
Health.
Health, right? So good health, for sure, could be its own category, good health. What else gives you pleasure? What's the best thing?
Family,
good. What else is good in the world? Pardon?
Grandchildren,
yeah. Okay, if you had to make a list of what's the best, right? So what's better, good health or good food? Good health, okay. What's better, good health or good feelings, happiness and tranquility? You get to pick, right? Okay, so what's better, those good feelings of tranquility or family? Right? There's a lot of good things. What's better than all of that? If you really make, like, if you want to just list what's good, so better than all of that really is Hashem. Right? There's nothing better than Hashem. Hashem's the best. Right? But how can you have Hashem? You could have good health, you could have grandchildren, you could have good feelings, you could have yummy food. How can you have Hashem? But that's what Hashem wants to give you. He doesn't want to give you a second best pleasure where you have to decide this or that. He wants to give you the best, which is Hashem. So how could you give yourself to another? Not your time, not your stuff, not your money, but yourself. How do you give yourself? What's the mechanism through which you can give yourself to another? Through relationship. You have to create a relationship. Pardon?
Engagement,
right, a relationship. You have to be with that person. The more that you're in relationship, the more of yourself you can give. Just think about different relationships you have. You and your coworker, you and your neighbor, you and a regular friend, you and a close friend, you and a sibling, you and a child, you and a spouse, right? Those are all different levels. What's your obligation in each of those levels? Think about you and your neighbor. What happens if you don't remember your neighbor's birthday?
Nothing.
Big deal, right? What about your coworker? It's nice, but it's not terrible if you forget it, right? It's nice if you remember it, not bad if you forget it, right? What about your friend? What just happened to the speakers that got weird, right? Yeah, I don't know. You can adjust it. What about your friend, your medium friend? It's not also nice if you remember, not terrible if you forget. What if your close friend? Not good if you forget, right? What about your spouse? Really bad, right? If you forget your spouse's birthday, right? Really bad. Why? Because the closer relationship you have, the more obligation you have, right? The more responsibility you have. But the more of yourself you can give, right? You can't give yourself to your neighbor, really. You can give your time, your stuff, your money if you want to, but you're not giving yourself, but to your spouse or to your children, sometimes to a parent, but all in different ways, but to your spouse most, you can give yourself in relationship. The spousal relationship is different than all the other ones because it's two peers. There's not up-down, right? It's not parent-child or teacher-student, right? Or sometimes we think about, when we think about God, we think about parent-child, right? Or master-servant, or king-subject. What's the other relationship we talk about when we talk about God? We don't talk about it often, unless you say Shir HaShirim every Erev Shabbat. Lovers, right? Lovers. We don't talk about it often, but really we're God's lover, right? And that it's through that relationship, that romantic, sensual relationship. Shir HaShirim is all about that romantic, sensual relationship because it's the strongest relationship, because it requires free will to be in it. Right? When we learn about marriages in Judaism, we learn about divorce first. Why do we learn about divorce first? We have divorce. We're not like the Catholics. We believe in divorce. Divorce makes marriages strong. Because if you can get out, then it's your choice to stay in. Right? My husband worked, when he was 17, he worked in a liquor warehouse schlepping boxes of liquor. Mostly Catholic guys and him, Catholic Italians. So I'll try to say the Italian accent in an understandable way in English that a Spanish-speaking person could understand it. But one of the Italian guys got engaged, and the other Italian guys were bothering him about it. They said, "What are you gonna marry for love? First you love a her, then she love a you. Then you don't love her, then she don't love you, and then you have to get a gun or a divorce or something." First a gun, because they don't have divorce, right? Catholics don't get divorced, so you have to get a gun or a divorce or something, right? So he was saying, don't marry for love. He said, marry one of your father's paisano's daughters. Just make a match, but not for love, right? So if we believe in divorce, so we believe that every day you're in your marriage, it's because you chose it. It makes your marriage strong because it means that your marriage is a choice by both of you to stay in it. So that's the strongest relationship possible because there's no obligation, right? You both choose it, which is what Hashem wants with us, that we should both choose it, which means he had to create us with free will. He created us with the ability to choose a relationship with him or reject it. It's completely up to us. Do we want it or not? Right? And so the relationship that we have with Hashem is totally based on how much we want it and on nothing else. Because in this case, a relationship is always as good as the lowest common denominator, the lowest desire. Right? So think about a college student who loves her professor. He's so handsome. Is that a love relationship? No, hopefully not, right? Hopefully that's just a crush. That's just, she's looking at him, but it's really just, it's just a fantasy. It's really a professional relationship. If he keeps it professional, he's the lowest common denominator, right? Think about a kid who loves Justin Bieber, right? Justin Bieber doesn't even know she exists, right? So there's no love there, right? That's just a star fan relationship. Right? It doesn't matter what she thinks. The relationship's only as good as the lowest level of the relationship. So in our relationship with Hashem, it's only as good as the lowest level. And we're always the lowest. Because Hashem loves us 100%. So we get to pick the level. Right? Because it's only as good as what we want. Okay, so God made us in his image so that we could have a relationship with him. Think about, we need to be sort of like the one that we have a relationship with. It's important to have some kind of similarity, right? I mean, cross-cultural marriages work, but they could be difficult just because you're from a different culture, right? I have an American daughter married to a Russian boy, right? So they're both Jews, they're both Orthodox, they're both nice. There's cultural differences, right? And some of those things get in the way. They're still married, still happy, but it makes a difference. Think about relationships you have with things that are not so much like you. Who has a pet? Anybody have pets? Anybody has a dog? Anybody have a snake?
Chickens.
Okay, good. Chickens. Anybody have fish? Fish, you have fish? Wow. Okay, so let me ask you. Who shows you more love in their face when you walk into the room? Your dog, right? But do you see any kind of love on the face of your fish? No. Not really. But the chickens, do you see any love on their face?
No,
not really, no. Do they run ever to greet you? Like they know you're bringing food or something, right? No?
They pretty much run away.
But what about your dog? He comes to greet you.
No, they run around.
Yeah, so excited, right? So we have a strong, most people that have dogs love their dogs more than they love their chickens, and certainly more than they love their fish. I mean, your fish dies, what do you do? Aw, and then you flush it, right? But not your dog. If your dog dies, you cry and cry and cry. It's a real relationship, right? Because they're more like us. We can see emotions on their face. We see happiness, we see sadness, we see jealousy, we see pain, we see loneliness, we see guilt. You know, like if I turn my back and the dog eats the butter off the table and I turn around, he's like, right? He's really embarrassed. Like he gives me a look like, oh, I'm sorry, I did something wrong. I could see it in his face. So the more like we are, the more of a real relationship we can have. Of course, we can have more of a relationship with a human being than with a dog. But you can just see this progression of the more like you are, a snake, not much of a relationship. A dog, more of a relationship. A human, more of a relationship. A human that's more like you, more of a relationship. So God wanted to create a relationship with a creature so that he could give himself to that creature. The only way you can give is yourself is through relationship. So he had to create a creature that was like him, which is why we're created in God's image. What does that mean to be created in God's image? Does God have a shape?
No.
No, right? That's the right answer. No. So what does it mean then to be created in God's image?
Kindness.
Good. God is kind.
And,
pardon?
Spirit.
So we have a soul that is a breath of God in us. What are other qualities that God has that we have?
Generosity.
Wisdom.
He can create and we can create.
He can destroy and we can destroy. What else?
The word.
Speech. Excellent. God chose to create the world through speech, and he gave us the gift of speech. Other animals can communicate, but not through speech, right? So we have that. What else? We have free will, right? We're the only creatures on the planet that have free will. Plants can't go anywhere. Animals, they're completely driven by instinct, right? My dog, when he sees new butter on the dish, is never going to think to himself, you know, I ate the butter yesterday. She just bought new butter. I really shouldn't, right? I think I'll leave the butter for her. He doesn't think that way. He just thinks, is she not looking? I'll take the butter. It's all instinct, 100%. There is no moral thought about should he eat it or not. It's all instinct. Even though they can decide if they want to sleep, if they want a nap, it's all instinct driven. We're not. Part of being human is that we have free will, which means we have instinct, because we do, and we can transcend it, right? Only human beings can transcend their instinct. Animals might have instinct that's a higher instinct, like a dog might want to save itself, but be willing to sacrifice itself for its master, but that's instinct, right? That is just a higher instinct calling it to sacrifice, but we are able to transcend our instinct. So that's something that we actually have free will. We can make a choice that's outside of our animal drives. So we share that with God. Also, how many gods are there?
One,
right? So we know there's one Hashem. It's not just in terms of quantity that there's just one Hashem, but it's in terms of what Hashem is. Hashem is one. There are no separate pieces. Even though we'll say things like God's anger, God's mercy, we might see things in different ways, but God is one blended wholeness, no separateness. So we were also created in that image because we were created as one. All the other animals were created in pairs, but not human beings. Human beings were created as one androgynous being. That Adam creature, the first one, was one androgynous being, male and female together in one, because we're created in the image of God as one. But in order to be like God, it didn't work for us to be one. Because in order to behave like God, to be a giver, to be a creator, to do the things that we need to do to emulate God so that we could become more like God and in more of a relationship, we needed to be divided. So male and female were divided. Right? Now what happens? As soon as they're divided, what's the next thing it says? So I'll remind you of the story, okay? So you have one androgynous being, and God says it's not good for the Adam to be alone. He puts him to sleep. He takes out his rib, whatever that means, and makes woman from it, right? Now you have male and female, and the next thing God says is, V'hayu l'basar achad. You should leave your father and your mother, as if Adam ever had one. He didn't, so he's really talking to us. Leave behind your parents and become one flesh. V'hayu l'basar achad. What? They just were one flesh. He separated them, and now he's telling them to become one again, which is the whole point. If we're going to do what God does, right, the more we behave like God, the more God-like we'll become. The more like God we become, the more of a relationship we have. The more of a relationship we have, the more God we can receive, the more pleasure we can have. So we're created to have that pleasure, to receive God, so we need to act like God. So the more we can become one like God, the more God-like we'll be. So we were just one, now we're divided in two. We have to become one again. That's the whole point, is we're here to transform ourselves, to work, to move from one place to another. So if we're just one, so we're here, there's nothing that we have to do. Being divided in two allows us to work towards becoming one. So our bodies were created one in the image of God, and so were our souls. Think about what it says in the Gemara. One soul is created, torn in half, half sent into the world as into a male child, half sent into the world into a female child, and hopefully, around 20 years later, what happens? Okay, here, 16 years later. But you find your soulmate, right? The other half of your soul. What if it's not the other half of your soul?
It's a complete soul.
Hmm?
It
does have to be a complete soul, right? It's one whole soul divided in half, one whole soul, because it's created in the image of God, who's one. But then divided in half, and then sent down into the two people who then have the job of knitting those two soul halves together. That's the job of marriage. Take your two soul halves and knit them together. How do you do that? Right? How do we become like God? How do we knit our soul halves together? How do we create oneness? Let me just make sure I'm on track here. Yeah, okay. How do we do that? So, many religions have noticed that there's a physical part of us and a spiritual part of us. And many religions have noticed that spiritual is really where it's at. That's where we want to go, and physical can sometimes get in the way. So there's a picture that many people draw, a line, physical on one side, spiritual on the other side. The further you move from the physical, the closer you get to the spiritual, right? That is a paradigm that many religions have, which is why many religions believe in asceticism. In moving away from the physical. They believe in fasting, they believe in uncomfortable clothes, they believe in celibacy, certainly for their clergy, right? The holy person won't be physical. That's not our paradigm. We do understand that there is a continuum, and we do understand that sometimes moving away from one moves you closer to the other, but we see it differently. Instead of seeing it like this, physical and spiritual, we see it like this. Physical and spiritual, so that the physical is the gateway to the spiritual. You have to walk through a physical door to achieve anything spiritual. That's what a mitzvah is. A mitzvah, who could give me a definition for a mitzvah?
Obligation.
What else?
Good action.
What else?
Connection.
What else? I didn't hear the classic one yet. Commandment, right? Litzaveh is to command, right? But, and it is a connection and it is a good action, but good action doesn't cover all of them. Like, for instance, putting on tefillin. That's an important mitzvah. Okay, it's a good action, but what does it do? Well, it doesn't help anybody, really, unless you understand how it works, right? So a lot of people say good deeds, but there are plenty of mitzvot, putting on a mezuzah. Like, all right. So it's good because Hashem said it's good, for sure. But it's not a good deed, for instance. So, but connection. Let's go with connection. For sure, they're commandments. But what's the point of commanding? The point of commanding is to say, okay, I, God, see this world. I made all these souls. I stuck them all in bodies. Right? Eventually, you're going to drop your body, leave it off, and you're going to still be a soul moving on to Olam Haba. All human beings, not just Jews, are destined. They're hardwired for Olam Haba. We seek Olam Haba. We want pleasure. Olam Haba is pleasure. Right? We will. I told you before that was oversimplified what I told you. We do have a concept of Gehenim. That's just to get negative out of the way. Almost everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody has done some good. A lot of people have done a lot of good. The negativity will be removed and people will just live in the good that they accomplished after a period of difficulty. So all human beings are hardwired to seek pleasure because we are all hardwired to seek Olam Haba. That's what we're here for. So we all want things that feel good. The question is, what pleasures do we want, really? Do we want the yummy food? Do we want the money? Do we want the cool car? Do we want the beautiful jewelry? We do. We want all of that. But we know that there's a hierarchy. Would we trade the happy family for the beautiful jewelry? We wouldn't, right? There's no way. If somebody would say, I'll give you $1 billion, I'll give you the crown jewels, I'll give you everything that's in the Vatican if you give me your children. No way, right? No way. So we know that we definitely have values above. Think about, I was just talking to somebody today, what if somebody would say, I'll give you a job that will pay you $3 million a year, but it's in a town with no Jews. You have to move your whole family to live in a city with no Jews, but you'll make $3 million a year. Would you do it? 1 year. Maybe you'll leave the kids with your parents and you'll go for a year. But if they'd say you have to move for 10 years, right? So you wouldn't, right? People, I mean, maybe you have to think about what your values are, but are you willing to trade money for your family's Jewish identity? Right? No, you're not, right? So you have to think about that. What are the things that are important to you? So we do have to understand, how are we going to get the most pleasure out of this world? What are we here for? So God said, I made you into souls. I put you in bodies. Now the whole point is, grow your soul so you can get as much pleasure as possible. There are pleasures in this world, and you should enjoy them. But it's not all about this world, right? It's about where we're headed and the relationship we're trying to create. So I'm going to give you a system. How to use the physical in order to access the spiritual. It's called mitzvahs. Positive mitzvahs, this is how you grow your soul. Negative mitzvahs, this is how you protect your soul from becoming diminished. Okay, so now let's get tachlis. The mitzvah we're going to talk about tonight is the mitzvah of ona. Right, what does ona mean? Ona. How do you say ona in Spanish? Temporada, time. Time. What else? It means something else. La'anot. What does that mean?
To answer.
To answer. Right. Right. So it could be a mitzvah of time. So the mitzvah of ona refers to the mitzvah of having sex in marriage. Okay, so all that I'm talking about is about having sex in marriage. Let's just make that clear. This does not apply to sex outside of marriage, okay? So for sex in marriage, to your spouse, right? So sex with the person that you're married to. Okay, right? So it's an actual mitzvah to have sex with your spouse. And the mitzvah is called mitzvat ona. Whose mitzvah is it?
Man's.
That's right. It's a man's mitzvah. It is a man's mitzvah, mitzvat ona, the mitzvah of answering. Who is he answering? His wife. That's right. So the mitzvah is actually for the man to answer his wife's sexual needs. That's the mitzvah. Sure, he'll enjoy answering her call. But it's her call, right? It says in the ketubah, when the man gets married, you know, they read it in Aramaic. instead of Spanish, because it would be way too embarrassing if they read it out loud in Spanish in front of everybody, right? Because what it says is, I promise I will feed you, clothe you, house you, and sexually satisfy you. What? You're reading that out loud? That's the contract? That's what gets signed. That's the promise, guys, that you made to your wives, that you'll take care of them. So how does that mitzvah work? If a mitzvah is a physical pathway that creates a spiritual connection, so what's being connected here? The two souls, right, that's right. This is how you knit those two soul halves together. The two soul halves are supposed to come together, but they have to have a physical way, a physical root of actually being knit together. Under the chuppah, there is a magic that happens so that even if you didn't marry your exact other half of your soul for first weddings, there is a spiritual transconfiguration of those jagged edges that they reconfigure so that they will match up just nicely. But they're not matched up under the chuppah. They're just potentially matchable. It's the work of marriage to do the matching. That's what marriage is about, right? Is to bring those two soul halves together. So how do you do it? Okay. Let's talk about the letter Vav for a minute. Okay, what is the letter Vav? Vav. Pardon? Okay, you're going way far ahead, okay? So great. Vav is the sixth letter of the Aleph Beit, right? And it's shaped straight like this, right? And it means, what does it mean? The word Vav, what does that mean? The word Vav means a hook. The letter Vav, or the sound V, means and. So even a hook connects, right? Think about train cars that have hooks that connect to each other, or you hang something on a hook, it connects, or the word and connects this and that. So Vav is a connector. Excuse me, Vav connects. What is it shaped like? Nobody has to say. Just imagine in your mind what it's shaped like, okay? It might remind you of a man. It's possible. So we understand that the upper worlds, that the worlds were created through God's name, Yud and He. The upper worlds through the Yud, this lower world through the He. Excuse me, and God's name is written Yud and He, Vav and He. He is a feminine letter. It looks like the birth canal through which things enter into the world. Yud is a masculine letter. It looks like the seed of life. It looks like a little drop of sperm, not a drop of sperm, a one little sperm. That's what it looks like, because it's all potential. Right? So the upper worlds were created with potential. So that's the Yud, the seed of life, all the potentials in that. The lower world created with the He. How do you say He? How do you pronounce hey?
It doesn't have a sound.
Right, it doesn't. Thanks so much. There's no place to put it here. All right, I drank enough that it won't tip. How do you say it? How do you pronounce it? Right, just like that. Without a vowel, there is no, you don't say ha, just it's just the breath. Right, and the world was created through speech, so it's just breath, but it's all potential breath that hasn't been shaped yet, right? So this world is the letter Hey, the upper world is the Vav, but when you're going further into Hashem's name, so then you have the upper world is the Yud, when you go further in Hashem's name, you have the Vav, right? So the Yud and the Vav are actually related to each other, one shorter and one longer, but they're the same shape, really. So the Vav is, reminds us of, Kabbalistically, is related to the man and to his, what connects him with his wife. It's an and, it's a hook, it's a connector. Him and her are connected that way. Think about Vav The sixth letter of the Aleph Beit, this is the Kabbalistic part. It's all Kabbalistic, but this is a Kabbalistic part too. The sixth letter, each one of the days of the week are related to each of the letters of the Aleph Beit. So the sixth letter is related to the sixth day, right? So we have a concept that all the days of the week are wound up together into Shabbos. It's one reason why we braid our Shabbos challahs with six braids. Do you have that custom to have six braids? A lot of people braid it in three, but it is customary to braid it in six. Sometimes you see three and three. Right, three big ones and then a little braid on top, so you have six. And sometimes there's a six braid, but there is a custom, a Kabbalistically based custom, to have six strands. Braid? Yeah. To braid the challahs with six strands, right? One reason for braiding the challah with six strands is to represent the 6 days of the week that are woven into the one manifestation of Shabbos. Is anybody familiar with the seven Kabbalistic Sefirot? No? So when Hashem created the world, he created, I'm not going to explain the whole thing, but I'll give you a little introduction. He really used 10 Sefirot, 10 different Kabbalistic environments or emanations. There's a lot of different words you could use for this. 10 levels through which he created the world for many reasons. I'm not going to go into that now. If you want to hear more about that, there's tons of lectures online. I also have a website. It's called abiteoftorah.com. You're welcome to listen to, go to my Kabbalah 101 class. Maybe it's on there. I'm not sure. I think so. But anyway, 10 Sefirot. We usually talk about the lower 7 Sefirot, that the world was created through those. The bottom one, number 7, is Malchut. It's a feminine sphere, right? And we understand that the other ones all pass through. They go side, side, middle, side. It's a diagram. Side, side, middle, side, side, middle, middle. So they all pass through number 6 into 7. So the sixth one, if we're talking about the Vav, if we're talking about and, if we're talking about masculine energy passing into the feminine energy, the sixth one is called Yesod, foundation. Each one of these Sefirot are also related to one of our Avot, one of our forefathers. And in this case, when I'm referring to our forefathers, I'm referring to 7 of them, the same 7 that come to our Sukkah. So who knows, a gold star for this one, who is the 6th guest in our Sukkah? Yosef is number 6. What was special about Yosef? What do we call him, first of all? Avraham Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, Yaakov Avinu, Yosef Hatzadik. That's right, Hatzadik. Avraham was a tzaddik, wasn't he? Why does Yosef get the special title Hatzadik?
Because he rejected the wife.
Excellent. That is why, right? He rejected the wife of Potiphar. He was 17 years old in the house of Potiphar. And the Torah calls him beautiful. He's a man. And the Torah describes him as beautiful. Right? So we don't have extra words in the Torah. If Yosef is described as beautiful, it must be important. And for sure it's true. So he was a gorgeous, what's 17? Hormonal man. Okay? Think about it, right? 17 is just one big bundle of hormones. What are they? So he's gorgeous hormones. That's what he is at 17 years old. And the wife of the house is all over him, right? She wants him, and she's stalking him. And she finally creates, she is. If you read the commentary, she's stalking him. And she finally creates a situation in which she sends out all the other servants, everybody from the house. They go down to a big sun party by the river. And it's just the two of them in the house. And she tries to get him and almost succeeds when he sees the image of his father in the mirror and he's able to run in the window and he's able to run away. Right? What is that? He was able to run away. The gorgeous bundle of hormones was able to say there's something more important than satisfying my sexual needs right now, my sexual interests right now, right? I'm able to transcend and use my free will to go above my animal instinct and get out of here, right? That ability to transcend our instinct, even when it's so strong, even at 17, right? When it's so strong, that's the foundation of the ability to control everything, which is why he's called foundation, yesod. It's the foundation. Yosef HaTzadik represents Yesod, and that's the sixth sphere, the one that's represented by the Vav. The foundation of everything is the ability to control that. That's why we have a Brit Milah, right, that says this is really important, but don't put it in the wrong place, right? Put it in the right place. It has a destination, but it has to be put in the right place. Okay, so that's the letter Vav. So the sixth day of the week then is the and, is the connector. Friday connects the whole week to Shabbos. So that is also considered the letter Vav. So Shabbos. We said Shabbos is me'ein olam haba. It's a taste of the world to come. Why? Why is Shabbos a taste of the world to come? Because it connects, or what else does it do?
Sanctifies.
It sanctifies, separates. So on Shabbos, we have yummy food. We have more pleasure on Shabbos, right? The food is good. The clothes are nice. The house is clean. Here, the house is always clean. But in the States, I've learned already. Like, you know, there was a mess. When you turn around, it's gone. So, but let's just say you happen to live in my house. It's much cleaner on Shabbos than it is, let's say, other days of the week. So it's a nice feeling. That it's just, it's a good feeling. Things are nice. So Shabbos is nice. You have more pleasure on Shabbos. So for that, it's like Olam Haba. But really, it's like Olam Haba because you can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You just live in what you created. So if you didn't bake a dessert for Shabbos, there's no dessert. You get to try again, though, the next week. Right? So candle lighting is the end of the efforts. And it teaches us that there is an end of the efforts. And candle lighting, it's not your choice when it comes. You could do it early, but you can't really do it late. There is a cutoff time, after which it's Shabbos, ready or not. Right? We also have a cutoff time, ready or not. Death is like candle lighting. Right? Ready or not. It comes when it comes. And then you're done. Right? You can prepare until then. And after that, it's Olam Haba. You're living in Shabbos. There, you can't do any preparation. Hopefully it's mostly pleasurable, but different concept. Okay, so what we want to do then is use this taste of Olam Haba to create connection. Part of what Shabbos is about is chase away the weak, chase away the mundane, create space for my relationship with Hashem, my relationship with others. We sit around the table, we sing songs, we put away our phones, we chat, we create connections, right? This is a day of connection. A day, how? What's one way to say connection in Hebrew in a more Kabbalistic way? Connection. Chibur, kesher, but Kabbalistically, it's dat. Dat is connection. The word dat, which we sometimes use, often use, for knowledge, really means connection. It means a deep and thorough knowledge, but it means connection. Like, for instance, you may have thought it was a euphemism when the Torah says, and he knew her, vayida ota, right? But it's not a euphemism, right? That's how you come to that level of knowledge, is through a total connection. Right? It's a deep, deep connection with another person that creates a knowledge. That's how husbands and wives can finish each other's jokes and sentences and thoughts, right? You can't do it right away, but over time, you keep going and connecting and going and connecting, and the more connection you have, the more knowledge you have, the more knowledge you have, the more connected you get. It's all connected in the dat, right? So Shabbos is a day of trying to create that dat. But so we want to create a total connection. We want to become one with our spouse. We want to be somebody who says one. What's the mantra of the Jew? Our main sentence, right? The Shema, right? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We are people of oneness, right? We try to live a life of oneness, one inside, one outside. Who we are, we want to be one, we want to create one, we want to generate oneness all the way around. How do we do this in the sexual relationship. We want to unite with our spouse. Mind, intellect, so mind is intellect, mind, soul, and body, right? We really want to unite on all three of those levels. How do we do that? So let's go with mind first. So for if you want to actually use the sexual experience to unite, for mind, you have to remove distractions, right? It's in a way like the lo ta'aseis of Shabbat. They remove distractions so that you can then fill the space. All the don'ts of Shabbat push away the weak and create space that you can fill. So the first thing you have to do to create that oneness in your sexual relationship is to push away distractions. So for that reason, it's a preferred time is nighttime. It's not the only time, but preferred. It's less distracting. The world is quieter. Hopefully the kids are asleep. Less distracting. Hopefully the phone is turned off. Less distracting. Hopefully there's nobody awake walking around. Less distracting, right? You want to lock your door. You want to make sure that it's just the two of you. You have privacy and you're not distracted. So you can push away everything and create the space in which a connection can happen. Right? Then comes soul. Soul is you start to unite soul with attraction. Attraction and love and bonding, which really does come through the physical. So let's go for body for a minute. So for this, I just want to give you the tiniest little physical education. So we have what's called the arousal cycle in sexuality. So imagine a big circle. Draw, if you're taking notes, draw a big circle and cut it in half. And the top half of the circle divide into quarters. So the top half is an actual active sexual experience. The bottom half is the rest of your life. Okay? So the first thing that happens is arousal. Right? So at the beginning of the sexual experience is arousal. So it could begin with flirtation, could begin with a look, it could begin with a request, it could begin with making a date in your calendar, right, and making a decision that you're planning this activity. Especially for, let's say, young moms who are tired or dads who are tired, it's good to like plan 2 a.m. That's our time. We both get a nap first, and then we'll have energy then, right? And then you can fall back asleep afterwards, right? It's important to plan it. It's not always spontaneous. It doesn't have to be spontaneous for it to be good, right? So it's important to. So there's a lot of different ways it can start, but the first quarter of that pie on the top is the beginning. So that's the beginning called arousal. Then comes the phase called plateau. That's much more interest, much more is going on. That's definitely always happening in private where things get hot and heavy. And then the third stage is climax. So that's really your destination. Think about that for a minute, right? That peak moment of pleasure. That really is me'ein olam haba. Because you're in total pleasure with no place else to go and nothing else to do. You've arrived, right? It's just like Shabbat. It's just like Olam Haba. You're there. You spent the time working towards your goal, and now you're there in the moment, however long that moment lasts. But it is a taste of Olam Haba when you get to that space. So then what happens after that? After that comes what's called resolution. Resolution. That's a very important time that some people skip, but it's a very important part of the whole physical experience. That's the part during that peak moment, a lot of hormones come out, including the hormone oxytocin. Oxytocin, I don't know about in Spanish, but in English it's known as the cuddle hormone. Bless you. It's the cuddle hormone. It's the hormone that makes you feel so connected. Bless you. It's the hormone that comes out when a woman's nursing her baby, so she feels very connected to her baby. But it's also a hormone that's released in the sexual experience, so you feel very connected to the one with whom you just shared this experience. This is one reason why having sex in college or not married is very dangerous, actually, because that hormone is released, and you can feel, the natural thing is to feel a bonding with the person you just shared the experience with. But you can't, if you're not married, actually relax into the oneness because you're not one. So you have to hold back. So you have to transcend your instincts. right? And you have these hormones that are being released that say connect, bond, become one, relax, enjoy, melt into each other, and you have to stop that flow. And you train yourself to stop the flow and to hold back and interrupt the hormones and what they mean. It can make it very hard to switch back into having a relationship that works well once you're married, because you can train yourself to not feel that connection. So that's the period called resolution, which is the period of reflection on the experience, enjoyment of the experience, cuddling, becoming one, feeling the oneness. It's actually the beginning of the next experience. How well that goes leads into the next. Because underneath, remember I said that's that half, is the rest of life. The rest of life is leading from one to the next experience where the whole thing begins again. So the rest of life is very important, particularly for women. Men can more easily compartmentalize what's going on in the rest of life. So they could find it easy to talk about bills and then talk about romance in the next sentence, where the wife is thinking, did he just say that I shouldn't spend so much and now he wants me to hug him? I don't think so, right? So women are very connected, and everything that goes on really is a reflection of, it's a reflection of, and it's leading towards the next encounter in the bedroom. So it both reflects and generates love. Whatever's happening there is a reflection of the relationship and a generator of the relationship. So you have to see it as both a mirror of how things are going on and the generator for creating a deeper connection. But it's important to use all the parts of yourself in this connection. Let's say you're angry. We don't believe in kiss and makeup. We believe in makeup and kiss. Right? Makeup comes first. You don't go into a sexual relationship with anger, because anger's in your way. You want a total bonding experience. So you want to try to remove things that keep you apart. So drunkenness keeps you apart. Fantasizing about somebody else keeps you apart. Knowing that you're going to get divorced, but you're just doing this for fun, keeps you apart. Right? The whole thing is about giving and blending and becoming one. So you don't want to have things like anger or fantasies or thoughts of divorce or anything like that at that moment, because the whole point is to become one, not to have something in between you. So, and again, sounds are distractions from the rest of the house. If possible, you want to, it's hard when you're a young parent and hear the pitter-patter of little feet. Sometimes you just have to get distracted. But in general, you want to try to make sure other distractions are away so that you can really use the experience to create oneness. What happens when you do that? When you're doing that, you're really using your bedroom, what it's supposed to be. Who knows what the bedroom is called? If our house is called a miniature sanctuary, a mikdash me'at, what is our bedroom called? Kadosh Kadoshim. You have good education here. I'm proud of all your educators. Kadosh Kadoshim. And in the Kabbalistic books, the Kadosh Kadoshim in the Beit HaMikdash is called the Chadar HaMitot. It's called the bedroom. Because the bedroom is the point of ultimate connection. What's going on in the Kadosh Kadoshim of the Beit HaMikdash? Connection. Right. How does that happen? What's in there? There's two things that look alive that aren't, that are in there. What are they? The angels. That's right. The Kruvim. Right? The Kruvim have a male face and a female face, and they're gazing at each other. So what you learn as a child is that they gaze at each other when Hashem's happy with us, and they look away from each other when Hashem's not happy with us. But in fact, what it really is that they're male and female. When Hashem's happy with us, they're actually united as a couple. And when Hashem's not so happy, then they're back to back, right? So they're either engaged in a physical relationship or back to back. That's what's going on in Kadosh Kadoshim, because that is the ultimate connection. And that's where the Shekhinah comes into the world, is through that point. So the Shekhinah actually enters the world through the Kadosh Kadoshim, through the Kruvim, into the world, and it spreads out from there. We don't have a Kadosh Kadoshim today. We don't have a Beit HaMikdash, but we do have our Mikdash Me'at, which means that properly carried out with love, according to Halacha, with passion and enjoyment, we become those Kruvim. We become that vehicle that pulls the Shekhinah into the world. Really, making love according to halacha with your spouse is the holiest act you can do. More than tefillah, more than a korban, more than tzedakah, really, it brings shalom into the world in the most powerful way. Shalom comes from the root shalem, right? Wholeness or completion. You're creating wholeness. You're emulating Hashem by creating one out of two, by creating one out of disparate parts, bringing them together in total connection. That is emulating Hashem. You're giving, you're creating. Even if you're not creating life, you're certainly creating love. You're giving, you're creating, and you're creating oneness. You're emulating Hashem in the most powerful and positive way possible at that moment in your relationship. It pulls the Shekhinah into the world, and from there it spreads out to the whole world. You can create world peace by having a healthy relationship with your spouse. You can add to world peace. But we can. We can completely transform. And then the v'hayu, the directive of v'hayu l'basar echad, you should become one flesh, can switch into v'hayu l'vaser echad. You shall proclaim oneness. L'vaser, like a besurot tovot. Do you ever say that? Besurot tovot. Right, so that the word levaser means to proclaim or to hand the message or good tidings, right? So v'hayu levaser echad, and you shall proclaim oneness. So it is by becoming one flesh, by taking what was one, divided into two, and knitting it back together into oneness, that's the process through which we emulate Hashem and proclaim Hashem's oneness in the world. So that's the Kabbalistic insight. You can ask any questions that you want, but you should know that it's a very holy, very special, very important activity that should be done with a lot of love and enjoyment in private. Any questions? I'm sure you're shy. If you have questions for real, you can email me if you want, because occasionally I get questions. If you get brave in a minute, you can ask me, or you can email me at elisabulow@gmail.com. Or you can come over to me afterwards if you don't want to ask in public. Okay, thank you very much for coming.